Okay then. And chance. Listen to Game On. Pass go, collect $200, and stop playing Monopoly.
Correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role.
www.d20radio.com.
Game On.
Gamer Nation, against all odds, it's time for episode 5 of Game On. I'm your host, Fiddleback, otherwise known as Brian in the real-world forums of life. And sharing host duties today is my own personal, Tyler Durden, Andy.
That's right, kids. The first rule of Game On is to never discuss Game On.
Very nice.
Yes.
So, Brian, how you doing there?
I'm finer than frog's hair.
Fine, that's pretty fine, sir.
It is. It's hard to comb. So.
All righty. Well, today we're going to take a little departure from our usual methods. Today's focus is going to be on role-playing games.
Oh, so we get to stuff gamers into a Volkswagen instead of the toboggan?
Yeah, go with that. That'll work.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Normally, we'd give you some sort of grand overview of all sorts of different RPGs and the various systems they use and why we like them and how to build characters and how to fight and all that stuff. Instead, today we're going to talk about one aspect of such games. The roll.
Rolling the dice?
No. The other roll.
A hoagie? A hero
no,
sandwich.
The other role.
Oh, the role of your character, perhaps?
That's right.
Excellent.
That'll be cool.
It will be, because we just said it would be.
Mm-hmm. Upkeep phase.
Well, kids, thanks today go out to Hero of Time Beta for his wonderful little opening bumper. Keep sending him in to Game On at d20radio.com, Gamer Nation, and we will keep playing them.
Order 66 recorded their one-year anniversary show last weekend, episode 50.
Awesome.
Yes, it was. Episode 50 is over 3 hours of conversation with Sam Witwer, Rodney Thompson, and Sterling Hershey.
I love that name.
Plus tons of cameo appearances from a host of Order 66 listeners. Listen to the boys talk about all sorts of things related to Star Wars Saga Edition and good RPG gaming in general.
I'm more of a Colonel guy myself, but, you know, hey, whatever.
Well, it's your private concern.
Oh, you're funny. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the Super Gaming Podcast has once again graced us with two episodes.
Two.
Dos.
Dva.
Okay, whatever. Gesundheit. Mostly Joe, perhaps you've heard of him. Tops.
Tops.
Oh, here yeah. We go. The Volkswagen just broke down.
Drink.
Mostly Joe talks to Tom Cater of Tom vs. the Flash fame about the speedster archetype. Build and issue number 4. Okay, we'll run with this.
It's like language is all foreign to you. It's like language is all foreign to you.
It is. Yeah. It's I'm reading this backwards and upside down for whatever reason.
Okay.
You and your show notes. and then gives us special edition number 3 with Steve Kenson of Green Ronin Publishing, where they talk about the Mutants and Masterminds game system. check out Meanwhile for all of your superhero RPG needs.
You can check out both of these fine shows as well as others on the D20 Radio Network at www.d20radio.com.
Bits and Pieces.
Well, Gamer Nation, it's January. And if you couldn't figure that out, you need to change your calendar. News in the gaming world slows down a bit post-Christmas, but there's still a few bits and pieces of it out there.
Albert Lamorisi's Risk is generally considered the first mainstream war game. And while the game has undergone many revisions since its debut in 1959, different graphics...
It's older than me.
Yes. Well, it's older than almost anybody I know. Different graphics, different goals, different themes. Many gamers still have fond memories of the early editions and their wooden armies. For the game's 50th anniversary, Winning Moves Games is re-releasing the original 1959 edition of Risk, complete with its flatly colored countries, weirdly aqua box, and wooden armies. The price has been modernized, mind you. This edition is going to be selling for $40 US.
So, did they, get a time machine to go back to 1959 to dig some of these up to bring them back to now? Or how are they doing this?
Well, let's just assume that they did, because that sounds way cooler than they, cut down a tree.
Okay.
Yeah.
That works for me.
Okay.
Okay, whatever. Hey, here we go. Jolly Blackburn, not to be confused with my cousin Jolly Roger. At Kenzer & Company, website announced, one more reason to check the front page of our website on a regular basis. www.kenzerco.com. Click on the Bob button. No idea what a Bob button is, but we'll find out. We'll be running web strips again starting today. New strips every Tuesday and Thursday. There is a caveat, though. We'll be presenting reimagined color versions of the classic Knights of the Dinner Table strips. New art and re-storyboarded, for the most part. Occasionally, and I use the term loosely, we may run all new material. It all depends on our workload and scheduling. Also, you'll be able to get some sneak peeks of strips from upcoming issues and products, like the Bag World Trade paperback.
For those of you who don't know, Knights of the Dinner Table is an awesome comic. It's all about RPG gaming in the worst possible way.
Yeah, it's the only thing you're missing is the flaming toboggan, because other than that, yeah, it hits it all right on the head.
I think there's one in there.
Is there really?
I think so. Well, as it's done in the past, Twilight Creations is releasing a set of glow-in-the-dark figures that can be used with its Zombies line of games.
Woo-hoo.
This new item is a bag of 100 zombie dogs to be released in an extremely limited edition that will not be reprinted, according to the distributor solicitation. I can say that. As such, if you feel compelled to make 50 zombie dogs a part of your life, contact a U.S. retailer to find out how you can get hold of a copy, which should be out by the end of January 2009.
Hey, that's this month and this year.
Woohoo!
I'm going to get me some glow-in-the-dark dogs.
Hooray for our side.
Gotta have them. Makes them easy to find when you go out at night.
Yeah.
If you're interested in more news of the gaming world, including additional details on these stories and more, be sure to visit www.boardgamenews.com. and www.gamingreport.com for all your gaming news needs.
Say, I'm looking for some sort of abstract strategy game, something with possibly parasitic conflict or bidding and economics, something with majority control and mass marketing, min-maxing that'll make people want to run away in fear not playing anything other than rock, paper, scissors. Have you got anything like that?
What the heck did he just say?
Well, in keeping with today's topic, we're going to look at two simple words that seem to cause so much confusion and, let's be honest about it, hard feelings around the gaming table. Remember, Gamer Nation, we do this because we don't want you to feel left out in the cold. We want you to be snuggled up, right close to the fire like we are. Heck, we'll even let you throw a couple logs on yourself.
No, I'm going to throw logs on the fire, because last time I had logs dropped on me, I got hurt.
You, sir, suck.
Didn't see that one coming, did you? Okay, what do we do now? Oh, yes, the definitions. Roll! Verb. Verbiage, even. To cause, to move along a surface by revolving or turning over and over and over and over. And you get the idea.
Yeah. Thanks. Roll. Noun. A part or character played by an actor or actress. The wise among you will realize that those two words are spelled differently.
Yeah, the one's got a little squiggly thing at the end of it, doesn't it?
That'd be an E.
Oh! Excellent.
Yeah. To the Bat Show! So, Andy, we're talking about roleplay, R-O-L-E, versus roleplay, R-O-L-L. And let's start by kind of looking at what we mean by each. A role player, R-O-L-L, plays the numbers on a sheet and plays the dice. And that's really all he's interested in.
Yeah, it becomes a number-crunching exercise to metagame or min-max his character out to be the most powerful thing in the game and, you know, just... You know, throw anything you want at me, I can take it on, instead of actually getting into the role, R-O-L-E, of your character and playing out those actions.
Right. We have a fairly decent example of this. We had a guy in our Star Wars game who created a scoundrel, which should be a fairly interesting build, actually, and a fairly interesting character.
It could have been, yes.
Right. And he turned it into... nothing. I mean, literally, he had no character. He was just, okay, here's some numbers, here's my dice roll. And that's boring. That's the most uninteresting thing I could think of to do.
Yeah, extremely. And that was, every situation that came up that I threw at you guys, his was the same thing. Okay, well, here's my die roll. Mm-hmm. You know, absolutely no interaction with me as the DM, or GM, whatever you want to call it. No interaction with the other characters or the NPCs, anything of that nature. It was just, okay, I'm going to do this, I roll a die.
Yeah, and he required a lot of prompting to get him to do anything interesting.
Yeah, I was wanting to prompt him with a large 2x4, but I thought that would be a little too obvious.
Right. You would literally, if you wanted his interaction in a scene or whatever, somebody else would really have to turn to him and try to engage him in what was going on in terms of his character. Which, if you think about it, if you look at the Star Wars movies and books and things like that, the scoundrels are all about personality. I mean, Han Solo, scoundrel, lots of personality. The guys like this are supposed to be charismatic and interacting with other people on their own. They shouldn't need to be prompted.
Right. Always into somebody else's business other than her own, always getting into trouble, driving the story along, creating new avenues for the GM to go down and to look at, playing off of his character. And any character can do that, but especially a scoundrel in that type of setting should just be all over the place with role-playing.
Right. And instead, this guy was just by the numbers. His character was a set of numbers on a character sheet, and that was it. And it's the most frustrating thing in the world to try to drag somebody like that along to get them interested in what's going on, because they really don't know what their character is going to do in a given situation except throw some dice.
Yeah, he If it would have been a nautical setting, he'd have made a great boat anchor, but that was about it.
Yeah. And so when we talk about Roll, the dice and numbers characters, this is the kind of person we're talking about. His only reason for existence and his only reason for being in the game is because he wants to win. And he's building a character that solely on rules interactions he thinks is going to win. And this doesn't work for us.
Yeah, one of my biggest pet peeves with our last couple of groups, especially with character creation, when somebody brings me a character sheet, I don't just look at the numbers. I look at the numbers to see if they're, you know, if it's possible to roll those numbers consistently or to get those out of a points buy. But I look at character creation, character background, what your character is supposed to do, what he's capable of, what he's not capable of. And a lot of these guys, they bring me a couple pieces of paper with some numbers and some stuff scribbled on it, and I get nothing. I know nothing about their character. You bring me a character sheet, and I get a 3-page backstory on this guy, which is cool because I know all the little neat little intricacies of this character. I know what I can do to him, what I shouldn't do to him, what I can do to push him in a certain direction, things that I can bring up that will make him react in a certain way. That's really what role-playing is all about. And that's one of the things I enjoy with role-playing with you, is because not only our Star Wars campaign, but our D20 Modern campaign, you know, I got this huge backstory. And as I'm reading through these backstories, I can envision this character in my head, what he would look like, how he would act, how he would react to certain situations, given his background. And we had a couple of really good interactions, and especially in our D20 campaign, with things of your background that I use to drive the story along. Absolutely. And some of the other guys are just like, well, I don't know what to do. I've got these numbers. What do I do with them? It's mm-hmm. the role play, you know?
Right. And oftentimes, these guys who are just interested in the numbers, you'll find that they're often the same guys who are trying to wiggle some deal out of the GM so that they can have, you know, the best weapons, the best armor, the best whatever, you know, is available for a given campaign. And my tendency when I'm GMing, when I come up against somebody like that, is to say, no, your character has no reason to have those. I've got nothing that would suggest that your character would ever have had access to those, would ever need those, or would even know how to use those necessarily. And I realize that the current thinking in how to handle your players and whatnot is to never really say no to a character, to find out a way to make it possible. But I need more than that. I need some sort of reason or some sort of motivation for your character to have had access to these strange things.
Yeah, if you're going to have the Dragunov sniper rifle, I want to know how you got it. I want to know how you came into possession of it. I want to know how you know how to use it, why you know how to break it down, clean it, put it back together, what makes it shoot straight, instead of just pulling, you know, a random .30-06 out of a hunting store somewhere. If you want that high-tech rifle, you better know where it came from, how you got it, and everything else that goes along with it, because it needs some detailing and to fit in with your backstory.
Right. My example is going to be the character I did up for our Star Wars campaign, who was a soldier, and in my backstory, I explained that he was part of the Sith army for a while, and that because of that he has certain kinds of armor, certain kinds of weapons, and all this stuff, and I still brought it to you and said, okay, is this going to work for my character? Is there a way that my character can do this? And at the same time, can we negotiate a way that because he has this better equipment, he has some penalties elsewhere? Which I think we ended up agreeing on was that he had no starting money, and that he actually, because he was in the Sith army, started with 2 or 3 dark side points.
Right. Yeah. There was checks and balances that needed to be put in place because of the amount of equipment and bennies that this character had. But I felt that it was worthy of your character having that stuff because of the amount of time that you put into your backstory, the amount of detail that went into the building the character, and, you know, the way you play your characters. And a lot of people just, they don't put enough effort into it. Even if you put just a little bit of effort into a character, it'll play much better.
Right. So when you're building a character, and it doesn't matter if you're building a Star Wars character, a D&D character, a Warhammer Fantasy character, a D20 Modern character, Serenity, whatever game you're playing. When you're building a character, build a character. Don't build just numbers on a page. Think about how your character is going to act and react, what he's going to feel about things, what he's going to do in certain situations, what his background is, what is he going to draw on to determine how he's going to proceed on in a given situation. If, you know, a lot of people, the standard cliched background is, oh, he's an orphan and has no brothers and sisters and doesn't have any family and doesn't have anywhere he lives. He just wanders looking for trouble.
Okay. I love that character. He's cool.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Boring. Okay.
Well, that was one of the things that I enjoyed about the Kingdoms of Kalimar system is even though you can do it completely and totally randomly, you can still get a fairly detailed background on your character just by going through the book and rolling for some of that stuff.
Right, yeah. Kingdoms of Kalimar is a D&D setting, 3.5, whatever, that put a lot of thought into not only the world they were building, but also how your character fit into that world. What way he came up in the world, how, you know, what his background, his life experiences were, all the way from when he was a kid up to right now, starting on his first adventure. And you can, like Andy said, you can create your own background. But they also provide a huge selection of tables and charts and things you can roll on if you can't think of one, to give your character some motivations, some previous experiences, some history to your character, so that he actually fits within the milieu that they're using. Milieu, that's a big word.
Yeah, it is. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Yep, no problem.
Threw that out there again.
Yep. So a role player, the guy who's just on the numbers, isn't really all that interesting to play with or to play against. They tend to min-max their character to such a degree that if, for example, they are a fighter, the character might as well just be the sword he carries.
Yeah.
That's it. There's nothing for anybody to work on. And this is part of the reason we prefer a role player, somebody who's into the roles, who understands their character and what motivates him, is because it makes the game a whole lot more fun for the people you're playing with.
Yeah, my other favorite was the meditating, sleeping in the back of the Sandcrawler Jedi. That was a lot of fun, too.
Yeah. We had a guy who rolled up a Jedi and literally just rolled up a Jedi.
Rolled him up into a ball and stuck him in the corner.
Yeah, he did nothing that would suggest he was a Jedi except occasionally wave his saber around.
And he didn't do that very well.
No, so I took it away from him.
Uh-huh, and I beat him up with some sand people.
That's right. But story-wise, I mean, here we've got this Jedi. Who doesn't know how a Jedi is supposed to act if they've seen the movies at a minimum? Mm-hmm. A Jedi is almost the paladin of the Star Wars setting. The guy has a code of conduct. He has things he will do and things he won't do. He has ways of approaching a situation that if he's really playing a Jedi are dictated by the fact that he is a Jedi.
And I even kind of gave him carte blanche on how he could come into the storyline, because your character being a former member of the Sith military, and we had a couple other, we had two scoundrels in that game, which was just fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, I gave him some ins. I told him how we could do this. You know, I said, okay, well, you know, you've been dumped off on this planet. You're falling back. The Sith they're moving in. Your Jedi master has been slain. You're on your own. You know, what do you do? And, you know, he hid in the back of the bus.
Really? That's the start you gave him?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I tried to set this up for him. I mean, he could have been a hero, and he just, you know, he dropped the ball. He didn't run with it. He didn't do anything with it.
Yeah. Had you not said that right now, I would not have known.
Yeah, that was my premise for him as to how he showed up on, I think we started on Tatooine or something mm-hmm. like that. But, yeah, he had been in an engagement on another planet. He had been with his Jedi Master. His Jedi Master had been slain in combat before his very eyes. And, you know, I'm setting all of this stuff up in his head for him that he can use to role play with.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I dumped him off on the planet. I said, okay, let's go. Let's play. And, it went downhill from there.
Yeah. That would have been so cool had I known that, because there were things I could have done that would have played with both our characters.
Exactly. And, see, I was going to bring all that stuff into play, but, we never got the opportunity. The game deteriorated so quickly over just a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. And this is... Boy, I really wish I'd known that. I can't believe it. You're telling me he had all that set up and he did nothing with any of it.
Yeah, yeah. I gave that all to him. I little silver platter. I said, here you go. This is just an idea of what you could do with this character. And, he didn't do anything with it.
Well, no wonder our game group broke up. Jesus Christ. Oh, man.
Yeah, I was like, cool, we've got a lone Jedi, we've got a former Sith military army person, we've got a couple of, vagrant nerf herder scoundrels that I can bring into this. I can just mash all of these guys together, and it'll be the craziest adventure anybody's ever been on. And nobody did anything, of course, but you. And it is, it turns into a circus act with, a clown car with one wheel. And, why doesn't it go anywhere?
Oh, jeez. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had high hopes for that game, and it just didn't do anything.
Yeah. All right. So obviously, this is, again, a problem with the guy who's just working the numbers, is there's no way for another character to interact with him. I mean, I can, like I said, I can point you at something, but you might as well just be the sword you're carrying or the gun you're packing or whatever.
Exactly.
You know, I'll use it if that's the way you want to play,
Yeah.
I don't need you if you're just going to do that. Okay.
Yeah. Don't be a tool. I've got one. Thank you.
All right. So I want to talk a little bit about how, if you're the kind of guy who maybe gets stuck for ideas on character backgrounds and character motivations and how to be a character, I want to talk a little bit about how you can draw that from your starting position, which is the numbers on the sheet. Even though we don't want you to focus on the numbers on the sheet, how can you use those to develop what your character's like? You tend to play Rangers quite a bit, right?
Yes.
Okay. Are all your Rangers identical?
Well, in the sense that they are a ranger, yeah, they are. But other than that, no. I try to, even though I usually play a ranger, I try and differentiate what skill sets they're going to have and what role they're going to portray within the party. Does he need to be a ranged combatant? Does he need to be a melee combatant? Does he need to have, bits and pieces of both of those? Is he a charismatic character? Is he standoffish? Does he... interact well with others? Does he kind of hang back? Is he, stuff like that.
Right. And we're not talking your standard character development ideas like, oh, if he's got a low charisma, then he could be either completely alien to the people he's interacting with, or he could be really ugly, or he could, all this stuff. If he's got a low intelligence, he's not very smart, he's kind of dumb, he doesn't, that kind of thing. That's pretty basic, okay? We're talking about, if your ranger likes to fire from cover, okay, he's built to stand off from the enemy while the rest of the group is engaging him and kind of huck arrows at him. Why does he like to do that?
Well, that just may be his style. He may, he may think he's a ninja instead of an elven ranger or something of that nature. The way I see a ranger being played is hanging back in the wings, as it were, and, using him as a scout, moving him into a forward position, using him as the forward observer of the group to scout out what's going on ahead of you and picking targets of opportunity, finding that lone soldier who's off by himself and, you know, coup de grace-ing him or sticking an arrow in him or you know, doing whatever.
Right.
And that's kind of why I do that. But on top of that, you can throw other things in there. Maybe he just doesn't, you know, want to be up at the forefront. You know, he doesn't want to be at the pointy end of the spear because that's where people get stuck.
Right.
So, you know, he hangs back and he picks things off. He's a support character. He helps out the other characters when they get into a pinch. You know, there's a lot of different ways to run that.
Right. So part of the reason he stands off and maybe, you know, he's away from the party when he's doing his thing is the fact that he's afraid to get in there and mix it up directly with somebody. And maybe that fear comes from the fact that something in his past happened to either somebody he knew and cared about or something he witnessed happening to somebody else, and he doesn't want any part of that thing. Maybe his older brother was an archer in the king's army, and the troops, the cavalry troops closed with him and just sliced him up and killed him right there on the battlefield. Well, that might enforce in his mind the reason he needs to stay as far out of combat as he possibly can, out of direct melee combat. So that's a chunk of backstory, his brother in the army, that you can use to build your character around, the actual motivations and personality of your character.
Right, and it ties in with a lot of other things. Maybe, you know, maybe he's standoffish towards military personnel or people in militaristic type groups because of that. Mm-hmm. You know, he you know, my brother was in the army and he died. Well, if you join the army, that means you're going to die. You know, sometimes that's true, but that's another thing that you can role play on. You can add that into your character, and you can add that to his backstory, and other characters can notice things like that and play off of it.
Right. Maybe my character is the rogue, and my character has this thing about people who, even though he's a rogue and doesn't do it himself, he has this thing about people who don't get mixed up in the melee combat. So maybe he's going to notice that your ranger is never right up where all the fighting is, and maybe he's going to use that to kind of taunt your character a little bit. And that becomes, you know, it could be the start of an interaction between the two characters that might drive some story points forward.
Right.
You know, I'm always taunting you, and so you get offended at it one day, and maybe you do something that, had you been thinking clearly, you might not have done, but it leads to some adventure. Maybe you sell off my favorite jewel that I collected three adventures ago or whatever, just to get even with me.
Right.
So now I've got to go start this whole thing where I got to get this jewel back and all this other stuff, you know? And that's a party adventure right there. One of the other things is when you look at these numbers on your sheet, what you're going to want to do is consider them to be guidelines. Don't treat them as the be-all, end-all of your character.
Yeah, if the numbers become hard and fast, that's the way the game is going to play, hard and fast. Mm-hmm. It's going to be difficult. Things are going to end quickly and usually poorly because you haven't played it. You haven't role-played it. Mm-hmm. The way you and I both GM is, you know, you might be able to pull this off because your numbers say so, but role play it for me. Give me a reason that your character can saunter into the bar and, you know, do whatever he's going to do and not be noticed.
Right. Don't just tell me, okay, I rolled a 26 for my stealth skill, and so I'm going to, you know, sneak up and take the gun away from the bad guy. That doesn't interest me. That, to me, you're not really selling the reason your character can do that. However, if you say something like, well, I'm gonna come in low on the doorway and I'm gonna try to use the tables and the crowd to get up close to this guy and very, very carefully reach out and just see if I can twitch that gun out of his holster, and, you know, I'm gonna be really careful, pay attention to what he's doing, And what I'm doing at the same time, I'm going to look for an appropriate distraction to do that in. If I can't find one, maybe I'll create one. And, you know, go at it that way. Tell me the story of that character's actions for that moment. Because I will tell you, a GM worth his salt, a GM who wants the game to be fun and wants his players involved in the game, will reward that. He will not reward just the numbers.
Yeah, and our characters found that out in the cantina scene, and mm-hmm. he got, you know, flipped over and knocked on his butt and taken advantage of. You know, would I roll a 20? I don't care. I said you failed.
Yeah, it's one thing to just... And this is kind of hard to explain, really. I mean, I'm going to look at a character who tells me why and how his character is doing whatever it is he wants to do. And I might mentally just say, okay, I like that. That's pretty good. That's creative. It's helping to advance the plot. It's helping to drive the story forward and make things interesting for everybody. You know what? Whatever he rolls, I'm going to add 3 to that. Or 4, if it's really good. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to tell him about that. I'm just going to do that in my head, and maybe he'll get away with what he's doing. Part of background and storytelling and being a character, at least in our games, and in all the good games I've ever played in, have been about being your character and about finessing these, what do you want to call them, invisible bonuses?
Right.
Out of your GMs or DMs.
Well, and see, that's... like the, you know, you and I have been discussing the fourth edition rules, the Dungeon Master's Guide. It is exactly that. It is a guide. It's not anything that's set in stone. It's a book to help you make your games better, to help you move things along, to move that story, to get the characters to interact with one another, to interact with the story, and move the plot forward.
Right. And it is very much a guide. It is just, it literally is how, 90% of it is how to manage your game, how to manage your players, and how to have fun, and not so much on hard and fast rules on what to do when. And I like that. I actually am, I'm kind of warm into this 4E thing.
Well, we definitely need to jump back on it one of these times, but it's a matter of finding a gaming group that we can tolerate long enough to run through a single adventure.
Right. Okay, so other things that having a character can do for you, both as a GM and as a player. The first thing is, as Andy pointed out earlier, make a story. It can help the GM to decide what your story is going to be and how your character fits into that story. And if you provide a background, and by no means does your background have to be 17, 18 pages of stuff.
And I've seen those before. Mm-hmm. Some of them can be cool, but sometimes it's just 17, 18 pages of stuff.
Right. A few paragraphs thought out well can do way more than those 17 pages could. And your GM will appreciate having an opportunity to figure out how your character is going to fit into the story that he wants to help you tell. A good background will give a GM plot hooks, will give a GM a way to motivate your character, will give a GM a way to trick your character, a way to challenge your character, and basically just fold you right into that story so that you become what you are supposed to be in a role-playing game, which is the stars of the story. You're the guys who are supposed to go out and be the heroes. So give your GM the tools he needs in order to help you become that.
Yeah, and speaking of heroes, one of the things that I enjoy, we didn't get a chance to play it for very long, was our Silver Age Sentinels game. And I required a lot of help from you in building a character because I'd never used that system before.
Right.
But I tried to put some background into my character and some story and some reasoning for who he was and why the way he was. But I took it even a step further and built my own miniature of my character.
Absolutely. That was very cool, by the way, sir. I appreciated seeing that because it helped me to picture what your character looked like and how I could use him.
Right. You know, you come to the GM and say, well, I'm a brain in a box.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So you're a toaster oven. Well, what am I going to do with you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. And you don't have to. You don't have to kit bash your own mini. A sketch helps.
Sketches work. I did a sketch of mine. I you know, built the own little miniature and stuff. You don't have to do that, but it's things that go a long way between you, the other characters, and the GM to help them visualize your character, how you came up with the concept of this character, why he is who he is, why he does the things he does or does not do things you would expect him to do.
Right. I, just from a player's standpoint, I like interacting with the other characters at the table. I mean, it's
very much so. I mean, that's, that's what role-playing is should be about.
Mm-hmm. It's one thing to interact with the NPCs that your GM throws out there for you to use and all that stuff. That's great. If you can do that well, excellent. But I want to be able to interact with the guys at the table. I want to know that if I look at the guy playing the scoundrel and say, go get me a droid, he's going to understand that I really don't care how he does it.
Yeah,
he's not going to go in and start negotiating with the guy who runs the droid emporium.
I think I've seen this.
He's gonna flip and go out, and he's gonna steal a droid from somebody.
Yeah,
or he's gonna scrounge one from a scrapyard, or he's gonna do something interesting that will give all of us an opportunity to interact in the story with that. Not just go out and shell out the credits and go, okay, here's 800 credits, give me a droid.
Yeah, that was... That.
I can hire somebody to do that.
Yeah, no kidding, you know, and probably paid less, so...
Yeah.
How many credits do you have? 801. Well, it's going to cost you 800 for that droid.
Yes. And one for the processing fees.
That's right.
Yep. So, the interaction between the players, if you know what your character is, can be so much better than it is if you're sitting at a table with a bunch of people who just know the numbers. I've got an 18 dex. Okay, big deal. Why?
Yeah.
Okay, armor class bonus. Great. Not that excited about it. Thanks anyway. You're an acrobat in the circus? Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. Hey, I'll bet you I could use you later on as a distraction while I sneak into Jabba's palace. I'll bet you I could use you to climb in through the top window of somebody's apartment and steal me the diamonds. I'll bet I could use you to go into the arena and perform this amazing act that will earn us some credits. You know, you want to think about these things. You want to put some effort into creating an interesting character. And you get that with somebody who's taken the time to look at what motivates their character. I'm not saying you have to have this background all worked out ahead of time before you even make your character. I'm not saying that you even have to have it all worked out before the game starts. But have some idea where you want your character to go and what you want him to do, who you want him to be, how you want him to fit in the environment that you're playing in.
Yeah, if you have just a baseline of what your character, of what you think your character should be or could be, there's no reason that can't evolve as the game evolves. He can pick up these traits as he goes along. He can pick up the tics and little oddities that characters sometimes have. You know, it doesn't have to be set in stone right from the get-go. You can pick this stuff up as you go along and make it work if you role-play it.
I have allowed people in the middle of a campaign, you know, three or four sessions in or whatever, when they realize that something they've written down as part of their background or whatever doesn't really fit or doesn't make any sense with what's going on, I have allowed them to change their background. Not a lot. I mean, you're not talking like totally rewriting your history. But like, say, you spent, I don't know, maybe you're playing a modern campaign. So you spent 2 years as a truck driver. Well, for whatever reason, your modern campaign is, you know, having you hiking up the Himalayas for the first 9 sessions or whatever. You know, whatever the case may be. And so your truck driving background really doesn't matter into the campaign that we're doing. So maybe I'll allow you to change that a little bit to be something a little more useful to the campaign. You know?
Like a truck driving Sherpa.
There you go, a truck driving Sherpa. Perfect. Chief Sherpa.
I was a Yeti handler.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that explains the scars.
It does.
You're not supposed to handle them there.
That's why I walk this way now.
I guess I can't really drive the point home enough for those who have never really thought about things this way. But I'm gonna give you some examples. I got involved in a, dare I say it, LARP. It was a Vampire the Masquerade game. First LARP I had ever played. Yeah, you love this one.
Yeah.
First LARP.
And I got to witness this all firsthand. Oh, yeah. So.
First LARP I had ever played. And I was playing with a bunch of people who had been playing the game for a number of years. I think there were, 13 or 14 of them?
At least.
Something like that.
I think the starting point, there was almost 20 of them. So. Yeah.
And they had all been playing together as a group for, I would say, at least 5 or 6 years. They knew each other. They knew kind of how they were going to react. And it had really gotten to the point where, even coming in as a new player, I could see this game was kind of boring. Because everybody was doing the same stuff they had always done. They were all absorbed in their pips, in their little skills, and how much influence they had, and all the things that are characteristic of a really in-depth, lengthy vampire game. I came in there, I threw a character together, and I decided that I was going to be the information broker. I was going to be the guy who knew as much information as he possibly could. Right or wrong, true or false, didn't matter. I wanted to know every piece of information that was floating around out there. In the course of about 4 weeks, I was directly responsible for the death of 3 characters, and they had not had a character die in the entire time they were playing. I took over my clan. I took over, in fact, at one point I was offered the, whatever they call the, I can't remember now, whatever they call the head vampire of the local group or whatever. I can't remember what it was. I was offered that position. This is all within about 4 or 5 weeks of gameplay in a system I had never messed with before, with people who were way more experienced than I was, and in fact whose characters were older and more experienced than I was by like several hundred years.
Yeah.
Supposedly. And just by playing around with this idea of an information broker, I was able to feed people pieces of information that I wanted them to have. And the sad part was, it got to the point where they were coming to me asking me to give them the information. I didn't have to approach anybody anymore. They came to me looking for what they wanted. And it was very simple after that just to say to this character, okay, here's the piece of information I'm going to give you that you think you want. And based on that information, you're going to go do a couple of stupid things over here that are going to cause this character over there to get killed. Just by feeding you this one piece of misinformation. There was nothing on my character sheet that said I could do that. There was nothing that said that I had all these resources for information. There was nothing that said I could dole all this out in any kind of an effective way, or I could learn any of it in any kind of an effective way. It was just the idea that I wanted to be an information broker that started this all rolling. It shook up the game, and people enjoyed it and had a lot of fun. Well, except the dead guys. But they had a lot of fun. I mean, we even had one scene where we had this big firefight. I mean, literally, fire fight in a garden. And I just stood off in the shadows nodding my head. Didn't participate. And everybody knew I was the guy who was responsible for making that happen. So that's one example of what you can do when you don't pay a whole lot of attention to what's on your character sheet.
Yeah, because the numbers there, they really are just a guideline. If you play strictly by the numbers, I feel it takes so much more out of the game than actually role-playing it and doing lots of neat things with your character, you know, portraying your character as such.
Absolutely. Further examples, you remember our first Serenity game?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. we were playing Serenity, and let's just talk about how we got our ship. Let's just start there.
We stole it.
Yeah, we stole it all right. We stole that big time. It was parked somewhere out in the wastes inside a cave. A reasonably well-guarded cave.
Reasonably.
Yeah, and I don't think either of us had any particular stealth abilities.
I don't think we had any stealth abilities.
Yeah. We weren't, you know, good gunslingers. It was hard to see how we were going to apply what was on the paper to the situation we were in. So what we did, essentially, was pull the classic Western fake-out. You drape a body over a horse, wander up to the cave, and claim to have an injured man who needs some assistance. Well, because we played this off with our characters so well, the GM decided that we would probably be pretty successful, and got entrance to the cave, got ourselves on board the ship, and literally flew it right out over the top of everybody else who was supposed to be guarding it. It was, you know, if you looked at the numbers, it was thoroughly ridiculous for us to have been able to do that.
Yeah, it was nigh impossible if you went by the numbers.
Right. But we decided we would go with story instead. And story was more interesting than the numbers that were on the page.
Yeah, much more interesting. Mm-hmm. So I think it was much more fun for us as well as the GM.
Yeah, yeah. He enjoyed himself for that kind of stuff. I mean,
yeah.
Later on in that same campaign, we at some point managed to blow up an Alliance cruiser from the inside.
And floated away like so much trash.
That's
undetected.
Right. That's right.
I take responsibility for that one.
That was nice. Yeah. Yeah. And somehow I can't remember exactly how it worked, but we had mounted a large gun to the top of our Firefly ship. And we needed to intercept this convoy of Alliance cruisers and other ships and whatnot. And didn't have a really good way of doing that at all. So we faked a distress signal, got the Alliance convoy to change course, come over and see what was wrong with us. They took us on board the ship, but in the process of taking us on board the ship, they figured out something wasn't quite right. So they sent the guards down, and just as the docking bay doors were closing around us, the GM says, okay, all these guards are showing up, and everything, you know, is going south. What do you do?
Load the main gun.
Yeah, exactly. Load it and fire it.
Yeah, fire the wave motion gun.
He looked at us like we were crazy.
I think we looked at each other like we were crazy, uh-huh. But it was the only thing we could go with.
Yeah. We were severely outnumbered. And, I'm going to fire the gun. You're going to fire
a stand-up firefight would have ended the mission right there, because we'd have all been dead, captured, whatever. We figured, well, we'll take our chances, fire the main gun, and, you know, literally let the chips fall where they may.
Yep. And as it turns out, the chips fell in what we like to call the critical zone.
Yeah.
We blew a hole clean through that Alliance cruiser. Just gutted the whole thing, basically, because we critted on the roll and I think critted on the damage.
Yeah. Yeah. We got real lucky on that one, but it was pretty spectacular.
Yep. And you know, normally your character's not going to get away with that. Can't do it. But we, between the combination of really good role play and really, you know, selling the idea to our GM and then nailing the dice roll, made it possible.
Yeah, and then it came down to the ship is literally falling apart around us, and we're like, you know, how are we going to get out of here? We can't just fly out. They know something's going to be going on.
And the rest of the convoy is going to be alerted.
Yeah, they're going to be on top of us. And it just came to me. I said, you know, just hit the attitude thrusters real lightly and just roll out the bottom of this thing like a big hunk of, you know, debris.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked.
It worked, absolutely. So things like that, which normally wouldn't be possible if you were just playing the numbers, become not only possible, but fairly probable If you're really trying to tell a good story with your character and you're really into your character.
Yeah, and I think that was the biggest selling point for the GM, is it really pushed the story. It got it right there on the edge of everything, and it was like, maybe they can pull this off. You know, if you're watching a TV show or something, you're like, oh my God, what are they going to do next? And that's kind of the route that we took.
Yep. And that's, people talk about having a cinematic game. You don't get cinematic games by playing numbers. You get cinematic games by trying to tell a story that is so amazing and so heroic for your characters that you cannot help but let these really cool things happen when your players present them to you.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of everybody dying, at this one point of the game, things twist just a little bit and the story continues.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of other little systems that certain games have tried to incorporate to simulate this effect. You know, you've got like Destiny points in Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
Which are game altering, reality altering things if you use them correctly.
Yeah.
You've got action points,
action points or plot points.
Well, you've got action points, plot points. They call them all kinds of different things, with the idea being that you'd cash these things in to do incredibly impossible things. Well, this is where I kind of had a problem with some of the things that got introduced in some of the more recent style games, was that the things that they were spending these plot points, action points, destiny points, whatever on, were things that we were doing just because we were telling a good story.
Right. Yeah, it was, they were just trying to further themselves to, it didn't really further the story, it just furthered themselves.
Yeah. If I don't want my character to die, sure, I could spend a destiny point or whatever it might be to prevent that from happening. Or I could tell or have set up a story reason why it would be a bad idea for my character to die right now. Maybe the whole reason we're on this adventure is because of one little thing that came up in my backstory that I created. And if I die, then the party has no reason to continue to pursue the quest.
Yeah, and game over at that point.
Right. And all of a sudden, there's an invisible plot point spent by the GM that says, okay, this character does not die right now. Maybe later he gets his ass kicked and he dies, but he doesn't die right now. Maybe he's only got one point left. Maybe he's unconscious, but he's not dead.
Yeah, not yet.
If I wanna, and okay, here let me pull a weird example. Keeping in mind that I've never actually played the game, but Force Unleashed. You've seen the trailers for the Force Unleashed game and all that stuff. Where the Secret Apprentice is pulling that Star Destroyer down out of the sky using the Force,
mm-hmm.
Right? And he's crashing it into the surface of the planet and all that. That, to me, is way over the top, okay? That's huge. I would never expect a character to be able to do that. Unless the character has told a really good story reason for that having to happen right then. Has he told the story to the GM in such a way that the GM is going, doggone it, that's so cool, we're going to let it happen? Or did he just kind of spend a destiny point to make that happen?
Yeah, or several.
Yeah, or several. Which is it? Which is more fun? Which is more interesting? I spent destiny points, or I told such a good story that the GM is seeing it my way and enjoying the effect that it has on his story.
Yeah, and in our terrible, terrible fourth edition rendition that we played, the other person that we made the mistake of letting GM,
mm-hmm.
It didn't matter how good of a story we told, he wanted us on those rails, and he wanted it to go where he wanted it to go, and we refused, so we jumped the train.
Yeah, we literally jumped the train.
And we told our own story, and we had more fun at it. You know?
Level 1 characters. I own a kingdom.
Yeah.
I shouldn't. But once the GM realized we weren't on the rails that he had planned out for us, he really hadn't made any sort of alternate plan.
No, he had no way to deal with that. He had it set so hard and fast and by the numbers that when we threw him a curveball, he had no way of avoiding it. It caught him right in the forehead and laid him out.
Yeah, and this is in spite of having played with us for a good 2 years as a player.
Yeah, he knows full well what we, and especially you, are capable of. So,
yeah, it's kind of. On the one hand, it's kind of sad to see a GM who has assumed that his players are going to play exactly the way he wants them to play and do exactly the things he wants them to do, and so he doesn't make any alternate plans or doesn't see where the story could take a different turn and still be cool, still be a fun game, not be exactly what he wanted, but still be a really cool, fun game. And so he hasn't made any plans for that kind of stuff to happen. It's sad to see that, but on the other hand, as a player, every once in a while, and I hate to admit this almost, kind of, it's kind of fun to break a GM.
It really is. Just, you know, if you can only do it once in your lifetime, do it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's to see him at the end of the game with his face in his hands and just, you know, muttering incoherently. You know, it was you know, kind of a high-five moment for us, but...
and keep in mind, Gamer Nation, we never, ever start out intending to break a GM. That's not the point of the game. We don't deliberately play that way. But every so often, we'll come up with a situation or a scenario that the GM really did not have any clue was going to happen, and he stuck.
Yeah, and I... When we did our D20 campaign that I ran, I hadn't run a game in I don't even remember how many years, but I had so much fun with that because even as many curveballs as I threw at you guys, you threw right back at me, and I had to, you know, readjust, you know, on the fly to keep the adventure going, and I thought I did a pretty good job of that with as many times as you guys derailed my train on that one.
Yeah, it's... With the right GM, telling the story is more important than doing the numbers.
Right. You know, and even with as much as I had put into the one episode of you guys, you know, taking over this ship on this pier side, and I had these maps and these aerial photography and satellite photography and stuff, and you guys, you're like, no, we're going to catch it out in the middle of the bay. And I'm like, okay, shift gears, here we go.
Yeah. As a GM, you have to be almost as good at coming up with story as your players do, and adjusting your story, because your world, whether it's one that you're making up on the fly or one that you've planned out, has its own backstory and history and things that go on in it. And it's as much a character, if you do it right, as the players' characters are.
Exactly. Yeah, you can have as much background and story in the setting and the surrounding as the characters in the story itself do.
Yeah, you have to be able, as a GM, to think about the history of the world. Whether it's just, you know, you're just playing in a town and that's all the world there is because nobody's gone out of it yet, or you have an entire huge planet-sized world all worked out. You have to understand how that world is going to react to what your players are doing. Otherwise, the game can bog down because you don't know that if you thought they were going to go right and they go left, you got to have some idea what's left.
Yeah, because just because you expected them to go right or you wanted them to go right and you've got that route planned, you know, there shouldn't be any reason you shouldn't be able to catch up on the fly and say, okay, well, they've gone this direction, I'm just going to run with it.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you can continue the story and not let it get bogged down. Yeah, you may have to sit down for, you know, just a minute or two and jot down a couple extra notes or, you know, think about it for just a second, but you should be able to do that stuff on the fly.
Absolutely. I'll be honest, most of my games I do on the fly. I take very few notes of what I want to have happen and how it's all supposed to go. I let the players decide what's going to happen. And
yeah, by the time we got to the end of the D20 campaign, that's kind of the way I was doing it. I would do a quick overview for myself, and then see how you guys were going to react to your mission, and run it from there.
Mm-hmm. And there's been more than once where I've sat at the table as a GM or a DM or whatever your particular rule set calls them, and I've said, okay, here's the setup. You know, okay, there's a big cave in front of you, and there's stalactites and stalagmites hanging and standing from the ceilings and floors, and it's very dark, it's very damp, and somebody at the table will pipe up and say, oh, I'll bet it's just full of ogres. Well, guess what?
It is now.
You're right.
Yeah, that's another thing, Gamer Nation. It's great to interact with the other characters, interact with the GM, interact with the NPCs, but don't ever give the GM ideas, because he will use them against you and kill you.
Yeah. Although, I do have to say, I have a very low player death rate.
I don't think we haven't lost a whole lot of characters. I do recall a elven ranger of mine dying once, but he was resurrected.
Yep. I will, as a GM, I will go out of my way. If you're telling a good story, and you're helping to tell a good story, I will go out of my way to keep your character in the game.
Yeah, I stuck the landing, but I failed my whatever role that I failed.
Yeah. Yeah, it was beautiful. You jumped off the back of a cart, you did like a double flip, you stuck the landing, and he reached out and froze you.
Yeah, it's the fickle finger of fate found its way up my nose and pierced my brain.
Right. But part of the reason that happened was because it gave the other characters an opportunity to come forward and try to affect the situation. Otherwise, it would have been just you, which is great and not a huge problem, but the other characters were kind of at a loss for something to do at that point.
Yeah, I'd kind of take it upon myself to go after the bad guy by myself, which, you know, wasn't the greatest idea, but, you know, at that point nobody else was doing anything. I figured, well, okay, this is my turn to step up and get into the thick of the fighting, and, well, I paid for it. So.
Yeah. But like I said, you did come back. You were successfully resurrected or whatever it was, and able to continue on with the story. And it just made things that much better. Yeah, you pulled off a really cool maneuver. You did an absolutely wonderful set of rolls to solidify that maneuver. And still, because story matters, it can go bad.
Yes.
So, that's Gamer Nation is kind of why we like role-playing, being a character. Because it opens up so many opportunities for both you as a player and your GM to tell this absolutely marvelous story that your character deserves to have told, as opposed to just looking at a sheet and going, those are my numbers, this is my dice roll, that's what happens.
Yeah, and it's just very... it's very bland. I mean, there, you have a pencil and you have paper to jot this stuff down, and that's to give yourself notes. That's to have a guideline of what number crunchy thingies that your character might be capable of. It's up to you, the player, to flesh that out, to give that character life and presence in the game with the other characters, the NPCs, and most importantly, the GM.
And with that, Gamer Nation, let's see what else is going on.
On the table.
Well, there's not really much gaming going on this week, folks. Andy and I have been fairly busy, but we did get a tiny bit of gaming goodness in. Friday night, I got to participate in Mostly Joe's Mutants and Masterminds Skype game with Old School and Seikos. And that's really kind of the game that provided the inspiration for our episode today. Just to kind of set things up for you. We were members of a sub-sub-sub-subpar cover band. which I know sounds a little strange, but that's what we were, who had accidentally been given some superpowers. What it amounted to is we reached playing members of this band, and I decided I was going to be the drummer. Now, if you know anything about stereotypical band stuff, the drummer is a bit thick. Not in the body, in the head. And tends to be kind of a bit slow, stereotypically. And to top it off, this guy was also the brick of the group. The muscle. The guy with the super strength. They also, classically, tend to be a bit thick. So, being as thick as two short planks, I decided that my character would roll with that, and he would sort of enhance the thickness, as it were. And so, I think he kind of ended up talking a bit like this, somewhat. And we carried on in that general. He was dumb. Let's put it this way: the numbers on the page weren't all that terrible, but I just liked the idea of playing the dumb character. And ran with it, and I think we had a lot of fun with it going on that way. We also had a lead singer who was very kind of glam rock, glitzy, you know, lots of flashy moves. Probably, you know, kind of the Flock of Seagulls haircut kind of thing going on, and he played his character up that way as well, where everything he did was this big kind of show in and of itself, which made things much more interesting for everybody, and I think I'm fairly safe in saying we had a hell of a time playing it, and I also think we're fairly safe in saying that Joe didn't really expect us to go that route. And overall, I really enjoyed the game. Had a hell of a time with the whole thing. Kind of surprised myself, actually. I really enjoyed it a lot more than I at first thought I might. But we completed probably, oh gosh, I don't know, was it 3 or 4 hours of game. Completed an entire sort of mini storyline in one shot. And we're going to be doing some more of it as the weeks go by and whatnot. But It could have been a totally different experience, because I have never played the Mutants and Masterminds rule set, so I wasn't really familiar with it. I'd never played with Joe before or any of the other guys, so I wasn't really familiar with what their style was. And it could have been really kind of a slow game, because we would all be getting used to each other and trying to figure out, you know, how do I relate to this character, and how strict is Joe with the rules, how much flow does he want, that kind of stuff. But just by taking on a character personality, it brought everybody else into it together. They figured out what their places were within the group, and in both terms of the band and in terms of the super team, and everything just kind of clicked. And we went forward from there and had a really great time with it. So that's what I did Friday. Andy, how about you? What have you been up to?
I played with some little plastic figures.
You got your blow-up doll collection, huh?
I feel sheepish. I broke out the black pajamas and did some more ninja eBay foo and picked up some of the Shadowrun Duels figures that came out a few years back, and these were a very large-scale Clicks model from WizKids.
Nice.
Based on the Shadowrun universe characters out of some of the paperback books and stuff that they had made. And of all the Clicks games, I was probably the most impressed with this one as far as the figures. Nicely painted, very hefty, decently put-together models, articulated joints on them. You can actually pose them on their base and do different things with them. They've got replaceable hands that will hold weapons or look like they're casting a spell. Looks like it might be a neat little game. I'm glad I picked it up, and we'll have to get together sometime and give it a run.
Cool. I look forward to that, actually, because when they first came out, I looked at them and they were really cool looking figures. But again, as with many of WizKid's little products, I was hesitant because there wasn't a whole lot of people who were picking them up or playing them or doing anything, so there wasn't a lot of input about how they played or anything like that. So I just kind of held off from buying them, which now I wish I hadn't, but okay.
Yeah, I was hesitant of it because it was a Clicks game. And at that point in time when it came out, I hadn't played many or any, for that matter, of the Clicks games, with the exception of maybe a little bit of the MechWarrior. MechWarrior, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Wow, nice pause there. But I was very interested in it because had always been interested in Shadowrun. But I just never really solidified my purchase on those to get to buying some and playing them. And now that I've picked them up, I regret not having done that much sooner.
Yeah, you need to track down the Indian guy.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, I need to track down the rest of them,
yeah,
too.
The Native American guy. Not the
Native American guy, yeah. Injun Joe.
Whoa.
Actually, he's a shaman or something. But yeah. It's a cool looking figure.
Yep. So that's what we did this week, Gamer Nation, and I hope your week was more entertaining, I guess. There are more game activities for you than ours was, although ours were pretty good.
Well, Gamer Nation, it's time for the end of the show, and that means it must be time for Back Chat.
Hey, Staker, we mailed your package. Congrats again on winning our contest. Enjoy the game.
I think he will.
I think so.
Yeah. Feedburner was showing 66 subscribers. Can you believe that?
Hooray for us!
Hooray for us. Right up until they move the whole shebang to Google. I hate it when they do that.
Well,
it'll catch up soon. Until then, keep telling your friends about us, and let's see where things end up.
Remember, if you'd like to contact us, you can write to us at gameon@d20radio.com. That's all one word, gameon. You can also log into the D20 Radio forums at d20radio.com and leave us messages there. We'd love to hear from you. Really, we would. Promise.
Truly.
We might even put you in the show. So until next time, Gamer Nation,
game on!
This podcast is intended for entertainment and educational purposes only. All specific names, titles, or products mentioned are copyrighted by the respective rights holders. Some sounds and music are provided courtesy of Soundsnap.com and Freesound.org. Reboot is copyright Alliance Entertainment. All original content of this podcast and its related website are intellectual property of Game On and D20 Radio.
Use your words.
Oh, dear.